Great to have you with us on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. We're talking today about the impact of Title IX here in Wisconsin. Our guest, Doug Moe, is the author of a number of critically acclaimed nonfiction books, as well as he's written thousands of newspaper columns and magazine articles. And his latest book is what we're going to talk about today, and you should take a look at. It's called The Right Thing to Do: Kit Saunders-Nordine and the Rise of Women's Intercollegiate Athletics at the University of Wisconsin and Beyond. So that's our topic. We'll talk about Kit Saunders-Nordine and certainly focus on her as part of the impact of Title IX. In its 50th year. Love to hear from you. How did the legislation change high school and college sports for you or perhaps your kids? Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Or you could email us, the email address, ideas@WPR.org, ideas@WPR.org. Doug Moe, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Hey, Larry. Good to see you.
I really enjoyed this book, and because, you know, it happened in my lifetime. And I thought back about women's sports, and I was just kind of oblivious.
I was too. I haven't told this to many people, but I actually wrote a college newspaper column in the Badger Herald saying, "Why do we need this Title IX?" So, it's been a learning experience for me as well.
It certainly was for me. It was just it was so much fun to read about and interesting to read about. All of the events. Just let's talk about Title IX for a minute. There were a couple of people, I didn't know this until I read your book, or maybe I had heard about it, but it was Senator Birchbaugh and Representative Edith Green, if I'm not mistaken, who were kind of the two that got Title IX.
Got the legislation on the books. One of the interesting things about that, though, Larry, was the contemporary 1972, it didn't get a lot of press, a lot of attention. And part of that was intentional.
Yeah.
I found some of the sports people in particular who knew what those 37 words contained, they talked to Representative Green and Senator Bayh and others that were in support of it. And said, "We'll be there. We're coming to Washington. We're gonna, you know, hold our signs up." And they said, "No,
no,
don't, no. We, you know, we just this. We want to get this through." And you know, as it turned out, a lot of people were surprised once they really found out the teeth it had, and you know, what was in it.
Yeah, and Birchbaugh's wife was quite an athlete, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, and she was, I think, pressing him or encouraging him, shall we say. She had tried to get in, I believe it was University of Virginia, and couldn't even get in school, let alone play sports. She was part of the movement.
And I think President Reagan at the time actually vetoed.
Well, yeah, and people forget that. I mean, that's a decade later.
Yeah. Yes.
What happened was the Supreme Court overturned it, kind of getting ahead of ourselves here, but it was a case called Grove City. And what the Supreme Court decided was that if you're getting federal funds as a university, which is what Title IX says, if you're receiving federal funds, you cannot discriminate by gender. What the Supreme Court decision in, I believe it was 86, said was they took it by departments. So in other words, if the athletic department didn't receive funds, they could discriminate. And that was so egregiously stupid that Congress passed another law, which Reagan vetoed, and they overrode the veto. So, yeah.
Well, before Title IX, enter to the University of Wisconsin, Kit Saunders-Nordine.
Kit came from New Jersey for grad school in the mid-60s.
Yeah.
And You know, it was an interesting choice of school. She had taught. I've been a counselor at a camp out there in the East, and a lot of the counselors had talked up Madison, and so she came. And what she did not know, I think, probably until she got here, was that the longtime head of the Women's Physical Education Department was a woman named Blanche Trilling. She was retired by the 60s, but she is a force nationally in women's physical education, highly regarded in many ways. But she had a mantra, and the mantra was participation, not competition. So she was very much against, and that her philosophy hung on here in Madison, UW. You know, a girl for every sport, a sport for every girl, but we're not gonna get involved like the men do with the elite competition. And as Kit said years later, it was like we couldn't possibly do both. You know, why can't we encourage participation and also provide you know, those that are truly talented with a chance to compete?
So how did she become? Talk about how she became. You know, she came here for grad school. I think she wound up with a PhD.
She did. She taught in Phi Ed, but she loved to compete. You know, yeah. She had done that. By the way, not in high school. She couldn't. There were no sports for girls for her then. But she played on association teams in both lacrosse and field hockey out in New Jersey. She came here and played on a city field hockey team for women. And because, again, there was no university stuff, really. But she then started what I guess you would call as a club sport program for women and gradually built that up. And so there was some competition, but their budget was $2,000 for 11 sports in 1970. I guess one thing worth mentioning is that a young woman who was here at the time, 1968, 69, was interested in athletics administration and was sort of mentored by Kit, really idolized Kit. And her name is Judy Sweet.
Yeah.
And Judy went on to be director of both men's and women's athletics at San Diego State and also the first woman president of the NCAA. So you come from, you know, the head of the Phi Ed department who didn't want anyone to compete to decades later, a Wisconsin grad being the first woman president of the NCAA. So that's
pretty cool. And she wrote the foreword for your book.
She did write the foreword. I was privileged and honored to have her do that.
I bet you were. That was just great. Well, talk about more about that. Some of those early days that Kit actually became in charge.
It was, you know, one of the things is I interviewed probably 30 people or so, and many of them were former athletes. And those women now, many of them have daughters. And when they tell their daughters what it was like back then, the daughters are incredulous. You know, it's like they can't believe it. They don't believe it. And, you know, I interviewed athletes who said we had to trade uniforms. Like if there was a basketball game in the afternoon and a track meet at night or vice versa, they'd have to figure a way to switch out because they didn't have a budget. They didn't have any, you know, facility to or you know, ability to buy things. They traveled in station wagons. You know, again, interviewing them, it was interesting to me because it was hard. But on the other hand, they had a lot of fun, too. So good memories for most of them and certainly appreciative of Kit's role.
Yeah, and her role, well, she became at some point, I mean, there wasn't an NCAA women's, in fact, the NCAA, I was early, it was against this. And so there was another association that was formed.
Yeah, the AIAW is Association for Intercollegiate Athletics for Women.
Yeah, and so Kit was quite involved in that, but just prior to that, I mean, she was also, she got a lot of sport. What was it, 11 sports, something like that going?
Yeah, and Title IX passes in 72.
Yeah.
And so UW, along with the rest of the universities in the country, has to deal with that. And they set up a committee right away on campus. And the committee met once in 8 months.
Yeah, well, that was right. Elroy Hirsch was...
Elroy was the men's athletic director, and he chaired the committee, and, you know, he was not in a hurry to advance the women, I think it's fair to say. And a couple of women members of that committee wrote the chancellor a letter and saying, you know, I'm going to resign from this joke of a committee unless... And so they reappointed a professor named Murray Fowler, who was definitely committed to making things happen. And indeed, they did. They started a varsity program in 74 for women, 1974. And Kit was named the first women's athletic director.
And she had not much budget.
Well, no, not compared to today, certainly. And I'm trying to remember. I think it was $100,000.
Yeah, 111, I think.
Something like that. No, that and you know, frankly, that was the there was pushback on the men's side because they thought, oh, we're all for women's athletics, but don't do it at our expense, you know. Mm-hmm. So that was tough all around. And frankly, too, Larry, people shouldn't be under the assumption that because Title IX passed that everything all of a sudden was equal or that it was a panacea. There's a famous infamous, I guess, maybe, episode on campus here in Madison in 1979 where the women's crew went up to Elroy Hirsch's office and changed from street clothes to their rowing clothes just outside his office because they didn't have a locker room. And that was 7 years after Title IX. So,
amazing thing. And it got a little press.
Yeah, well, they called the television people, but you know there was pushback, and you know we talked about, you know, in the 80s it actually got overturned for a time. I interviewed the captain of that rowing team, Jane Ludwig is her name. And, you know, she said, we totally copied Yale. The Yale women's crew had done a similar stunt or exercise a couple of years before. And Jane was laughing when we were speaking about it. But she said, but I've got to tell you, I got hate mail.
Yeah.
You know, you can imagine what social media would have done if they'd had it.
Yeah.
But she said the men rowers, the male rowers who had been my friends were no longer my friends. You know, just because they wanted a locker room.
Doug Moe, our guest today, as we talk with him about his book, The Right Thing to Do, Kit Saunders-Nordine and the Rise of Women's Intercollegiate Athletics at the UW, at the University of Wisconsin and beyond. Join in with your questions. The number is 800-642-1234, or you could email us to ideas@wpr.org. Get to Linda in Port Washington in just a second, but a reminder that you are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Jill Nadeau, our producer, Tyler Dinner, Trina LaSousa, our engineer. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. We're taking a look at the rise of women's intercollegiate athletics with our guest, Doug Moe. Doug's written a really interesting book. I really enjoyed reading it. It's titled The Right Thing to Do, Kit Saunders-Nordine and the Rise of Women's Intercollegiate Athletics at UW and Beyond. Join in. Questions, 1-800-642-1234, or you could email us at ideas@wpr.org. What were your experiences like? What questions you have? Maybe about Kit Saunders-Nordine. Did you know her? Join in. Linda in Port Washington, we'll give you a chance. Hi, thank you for calling.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm 72 years old, and I just happened to be talking about Title IX this past weekend with a great niece of mine, and trying to explain why I couldn't participate in sports growing up like she was. She's taking part in a fundraiser home run contest in a couple weeks. And I was a physical education teacher, as it turned out, as a career. But to me, it was something so long overdue. And I loved sports. I had two older brothers, and I think I loved sports more than they did.
Yeah, yeah. I bet it was, I bet your niece was a bit incredulous. You were talking about that earlier, Doug.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Linda, for calling. Appreciate it. Your experience was the experience of many women who are your age, for sure.
You know, there's a picture in the book early on in the first chapter of Kit getting a Hall of Fame plaque at her high school, and they had called her, they had written to her saying, "We understand you're prominent in women's athletics administration. What sports did you play at Teaneck High School?" And she had to write back and say, "Didn't play any." So she's not in the Sports Hall of Fame out there, but there's a distinguished alumni that's what her plaque is for. But it's kind of ironic.
She went around the state. I mean, she barnstormed.
She was a great ambassador, I think, for UW. She did all these nationally, actually, Larry. She did Founders Day stuff in the spring. And that was part of, I think, she and Paula Bonner, who was her first assistant, and Tam Flareup, who was a longtime sports information person. I mean, they were in a selling mode as well, you know, convincing people that this was the right thing to do, but also that it could be fun. And slowly but surely, you know, I quote Tam Flareup saying there was came a moment in 1990 where there was a NCAA volleyball game, a tournament game in the field house. And Kit and she were sitting in the upper deck, and almost 11,000 people came to the game, and they're sitting there with tears streaming down their faces, you know.
Amazing story. Cindy in Milwaukee, will give you a chance to join in. Hi, Cindy.
Hi. I just wanted to comment. I played basketball at the University of Wisconsin in 72 and 73. And I don't know if you're familiar with Lathrop Hall, but that's where we played. The out-of-bounds line was probably about a foot from the wall. And we only played schools like UW-Oshkosh and Maranatha Baptist College and some real small schools in the area. But we definitely didn't have the benefits of Title IX in those first couple of years of the varsity basketball team.
You know, thanks for the call. I've got to say that I tell a story in the book that was a year or two prior to that, late 60s, and a woman named Nancy Page, who went on and became a pretty celebrated women's athletics administrator at Stevens Point, UW-Stevens Point. Nancy told me a story. They invited up a team from Illinois to play in Lathrop Hall, and they had to do it basically under the cover of darkness, and when the FIAD department found out about it, they got yelled at. You know, how dare you play a basketball game? It is hard to comprehend these years later.
Cindy, thanks. But let me ask you this. In the end, were you glad you played despite the problems?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it was a wonderful experience. I came from Wausau, so a small town to Madison, and made a lot of great friends, and it was a great experience for a team sport. I had never really played that much in high school, so it was great.
Cindy, thank you so much. You can join in, too. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or you could email us, the email address, ideas@wpr.org. You know, that's her experience. It's kind of the thing, you know, because women... girls didn't get much of a chance to practice and learn their sports.
I interviewed a woman named Becky Sisley, who was with Kit here in the 60s on that field hockey team that they played on for the city of Madison. And Becky Sisley went on to become the first women's athletic director at the University of Oregon. And when I interviewed her, I think one of her quotes to me was, "They were afraid our uteruses would fall out." I mean, it really was quite something. How, you know, the minds that had to be opened to the possibilities.
Oh, man. Teresa and Madison, will give you a chance now. Hi, thank you for calling.
Good morning, and thank you for having me on your line. I just want to do a shout-out thank you to all those involved with Title IX. I was a student in high school, and I was subjected to a lot of the things you're talking about up until the early 70s, and I was responsible for getting the girls' volleyball team and the girls' basketball team into our high school, facing, you know, doing a lot of lobbying, petitioning, posters, going up against the school board, coaches. It was a lot of work, and I know I'm not the only one out there that went through this so that girls could have an opportunity to play the same sports that boys were getting an opportunity to do.
Where was your school?
This was in West Salem, Wisconsin.
Okay.
Teresa, thank you so much for calling. I appreciate your call. And again, you can join us at 800-642-1234. What was your experience like? Or do you have questions about Title IX or about Kit Saunders-Nordin? They're intertwined, that's for sure. 800-642-1234. Email to ideas@wpr.org. You know, Kit had, well, it wasn't really her, but she... She got a national championship pretty darn quickly.
Yeah, and it's one of my favorite parts of the book.
I love that.
In the middle 70s, this was.
Yeah.
You know, she's named athletic director for women in 74. And the crew goes out to New Jersey. And it wasn't an NCAA sport at that time, and there was a national organization that was putting on a championship for colleges, and actually the top club teams were also invited, so it was even a little bit of a tougher competition. And I interviewed Jay Mimier, who was their coach then. I think Jay said I got $500 that year for coaching, but darned if they didn't go out there and win it. But there's all kinds of stories. They got a new boat, but they had never rigged it before. So he had to go over and ask the Yale coach once they got out there to help him rig the boat. But boy, they were good. And one of their stars was Carrie Graves, who went on and, you know, is one of the
Olympian
top women's athletes, you know, that this country really has produced. Carrie died just this last year. She's actually on the cover of a great book called The Red Rose Crew, which is about women's crew and their getting to the Olympics in, I think, 76.
That is a great story in the book, because I think he told them to stroke at 36,
right.
And they come out of the box, and they're going 39 strokes.
Yeah, and that was Carrie. You know, she was all in all the time. And... they, you know, they did it right as they got to the finish line. Sue Ella, or Ella, I'm not even sure. Sue was
Ella,
great interview. Ella, okay. She later coached, by the way.
Yeah.
But Sue was in the boat, and she said, we got to the right by the finish line and caught what they say, caught a crab, which is your oar sticks in the water, and it kind of upends things. And she was afraid they had not made it across the finish line, but in
the
fact, they had
rocking.
Just... They had just crossed the finish line and victorious.
And it was, it actually got some pretty good coverage back here, back home.
It did in that, and that's interesting, but nothing like it would today.
No.
You know, Tam Flareup, who was a marvelous interview for me, and in fact, the book might not even exist without her help. She was so,
great person.
But she told me that when she came to campus to be Kit's athletic SID, sports information director, the sports editor of the State Journal, Glenn Miller, told her, we'll never have women's sports in our paper. That wasn't even true then, because if you go back to I think Tam came in 76 or so. You know, they had sports, but they didn't cover it much. And in fact, the first few articles I found on women's tennis, for instance, were on the women's page. Yeah. So Tam was right in spirit, if not exactly accurate about that. But then Bill Brophy came in as State Journal sports editor some years later, and that began to
changed it.
Get, yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Better. Although I think Miller did come around a bit.
Yeah. Yeah, they did. But it was grudging. I mean, you know, when Kit was named women's athletic director, she told the story as they're walking out of the meeting. Miller said, "I got just a few words of advice." And Kit says, "What's that?" And he said, "Don't be a," and it starts with a B. and you know, but that, you know, Kit laughed.
Yeah.
And she, as Paula or Tam or both told me, you know, she was the right person in the right place at the right time.
Yeah.
Because her personality was such that she did get along with people. She was hard. She was a hard person to dislike.
Yeah.
And yet underneath that, there was a very strong resolve.
Yeah.
And she was steadfast in knowing what she thought was the right thing to do. But she also had to navigate and work within the athletic department. So,
yeah.
You know, she was not going to throw rocks through windows and that sort of thing, you know.
Claudia in La Crosse, we'll give you a chance. Now, Claudia, thanks for calling.
No, thank you. I was in high school, senior in 1972, and we got to I loved sports, and there were many of my friends, and our only opportunity to play was in the Girls Athletic Association, where we would meet after school a couple times a week. And but my senior year, I think it was actually my future father-in-law who was on the school board who finally got a girls' team, and we had the first track team in the spring of my senior year. And the equipment that they gave us was T-shirts. that was the extent of our team. But I'm so happy that my nieces and my great nieces in that same town have been able to participate in all kinds of sports.
Yeah. Oh, Claudia, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. There's the whole business about shirts. I mean, didn't the women's crew have to wear shirts that small shirts from the men's crew or something at some point?
Yeah, and I think there were instances of the them not even being crew shirts. You know, they were like from basketball or something like that. It was pretty dicey early on. Cindy Bremser, you know, very famous Wisconsin runner. Told me that she actually borrowed her coach Peter Tagan's shoes, to race in, because they were better than what she
had.
And
that was a big race.
Must have had the same size feet, I guess. But you know, she was laughing again about it.
Oh, Doug Moe, our guest today, his book, "The Right Thing to Do: Kit Saunders Nordine and the Rise of Women's Intercollegiate Athletics at the University of Wisconsin and Beyond." Questions, give a call at 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or you could email us the email address ideas@wpr.org. Paula emailed that even after Title IX, women still got the shaft. She played sports in Illinois in the 80s, and they always had crummy uniforms, hand-me-down equipment, and never had first dibs on the gym or practice fields. She witnessed firsthand several times when the boys' baseball coach basically kicked them out of the gym when he wanted it for his team, even though the women had reserved it.
Well, and that was the 1980s, but as Judy Sweet notes in the foreword to the book, we still have to be vigilant today. You'll remember last year's NCAA basketball tournament, a woman athlete, tweeted somehow or social media, showed it on social media, the difference between, I think it was the exercise weight facilities that were provided. And it was a stark difference, and it did not benefit the women, you won't be surprised to learn, you know. So that was 2021.
2021. Oh, and it's still coming up. Well, Kit, as director, and I actually had a chance to meet her later, and you know, when I was on the athletic board, she had already retired, but I think I met her maybe a year or two before that. And she's such a spark plug. I mean, there's something that kind of radiated from her.
Yeah, and it gets back to, I think, what I said a moment ago about, you know, her being just that right person for this job. She became national vice president of the AIAW, which is actually an interesting chapter in the book, I think, Larry. They their battle with the NCAA, which happened in the early 1980s.
Yeah, you know, and talk about that, because the Association for International Athletics for Women were in charge.
They were, and they built a very strong organization. They had national tournaments, and the NCAA was quite content to let them do their thing until the women's basketball tournament got a network contract for the AIAW national championship. I think it was NBC. And all of a sudden there was some money available. And now all of a sudden, again, the NCAA is interested. And they started talking about possibly a merger. You know, how can we, what can we do here? And many in the AIAW did not like that idea, because they were afraid that if indeed they merged, it would be, as Judy Sweet says — I also interviewed Judy for the book, along with her writing the foreword — she said it wasn't a merger, it was a submerger. And once that all shook out, and indeed the NCAA did take over women's sports as well, the number of women's administrators declined significantly. And that was something they were worried about, and rightly so.
And Kit was a bit worried about that.
Yeah, she wanted here at Wisconsin, different schools joined the NCAA at different times. It all happened within a couple of years. But UW stuck with the AIAW. There was some carrots there to join NCAA. They paid for you to attend tournaments, where the AIAW didn't. You know, there was some cachet with that NCAA name, I guess. But Wisconsin, as long as the AIAW existed, Wisconsin stayed with it. And they got to a basketball tournament that they made the Elite Eight of the AIAW. Of course, it was a depleted field, but nevertheless, they got to go down to Texas, and Paula or Tama told me they had a ball down there. So.
Well, speaking of basketball, I think one of the controversial times in women's athletics, and it happened probably in Kit Saunders Ortiz's time as director, had to do with basketball and Edwina Qualls.
Yes.
She was a good coach.
She was. And she was, how to phrase it, activist, I guess. Because she filed an early Title IX complaint. Edwina came on in the mid to late 70s as basketball coach and stayed through the middle 80s. And she rocked boats. She gave an interview to the State Journal pointing out, one of our callers said, you know, we only got to practice when, you know, they could squeeze us in between the men's. And I remember Edwina saying, we even had to step aside for the visiting team's practice, you know, when a team was in town for a couple of days.
A men's team.
Yeah.
A men's visiting team.
Right, exactly. So she stood up for her team. She had some good teams. But then they had a very regrettable episode up at Minnesota. I believe it was 84. If it's not, it was close to that. And it was a poorly officiated game. Her team was getting, you know, fouled, and some of the fouls weren't being called. It was rough. And with about 10 minutes left, she called a timeout. Team comes over, and she says, "We're leaving. We're going to the locker room."
And now the backdrop of this, too, was that they were fighting for the champion. The Badgers were fighting for the Big Ten championship, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. There was a few games left in the season,
yeah.
And they weren't out of it, at least, certainly.
Yeah.
And as she's leading the team off the court back to the locker room, a couple of their captains, I believe, and three others said, no, we're not leaving. And came back and finished the game as five players. I talked to Mary Chernelik, Nellen now is her last name, but and Mary was one of the five who kept playing. And that it was a very, as I say, fraught situation. The Badgers lost the game. In the immediate aftermath, Kit and Paula sided with Coach Qualls and said, you know, it was her decision. But within a week or so, the tide had turned, and you know, they had, because she was going to suspend the players, and
yeah.
You know, the administration ended up saying, no, you're not going to suspend them. And then within a couple of years, Edwina had she had a very bad one loss record her last year, and left. You know, or was asked, you know, fired.
Yeah,
essentially. She's the one person that I wanted to interview for the book and just could not find.
Mm.
Now, I didn't have an unlimited budget like maybe some big-time authors might, but I'm a pretty good detective, and I found a lot of people. But I did not find her, and I regret that. I did find a very good article that the State Journal did at the time she was leaving that was a very balanced appraisal of her time. And there were a lot of good things that happened under her watch as well. So,
well, you know, I think as you it comes out in your book, she, Edwina Qualls, and she said a lot of things that a lot of other coaches were thinking too, and she wound up carrying the banner for equality.
That's
took a lot of heat for it.
Well said. And in fact, Tam Flareup gave me that quote. I think I used it in the book, that she said what the others were thinking, and paid a price.
Yeah. Let's take a call. Tryon in Milwaukee, thank you for calling.
Yes, well, thank you very much, Larry, and the other young man. I'm looking forward to getting the book there. It's actually Tyrone, but yeah, that nice try, though, Larry. That was a little bit there. I just wanted to interject. I'm loving the conversation, and I would love to see us support our ladies and our girls a little bit more as far as the media and everything that we need to do to get them what they need there. Because when they bring the championships home, whether it's volleyball, track, or whatever, we're all over them. But, I mean, as they're going through the struggles and the whine and grind and all that, you know, we're not so much on board. But I would love to see, you know, our athletics do better for our girls. I'm a father of daughters. I've got nieces and great-nieces. I'll be 64 in July there. So, you know, the years are catching up with me. But I would love to see us do the women better, just like we do our boys and our guys there. And that would be a feather in our cap there as not only a state but as a country. As, you know, we come, our women are our mothers and our sisters and our aunts and all. We should lift them up and give them a chance to participate so we can get their views and their opinions on a lot of different things as well. So I can't long-wind it with it, but run with that now, and I hope to get the book soon. And I look forward to talking to you when you come back again. Thank you very
much. Okay.
Thanks.
Tyrone, thank you so much. For that call.
Great call. And the book is largely about women, but there were men that stepped up. There's a booster club called the WIS Club for women's athletics that started early in the mid-70s. And by the second year, they had 40 or 50 men in Madison in that club. So I don't want to give the impression that nobody was supportive back then, and even more so now. But as Judy Sweet said, we must remain vigilant.
Doug Moe, our guest today, you can join in too. I hope you'll join in at 1-800-642-1234. Email us to ideas@wpr.org. His book, The Right Thing to Do, Kit Saunders Nordin. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.